You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here at the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can always watch us on Civic Media's YouTube channel, and you can check out at Maggie Dawn Show on Facebook, X, and Instagram. We also stream the shows there, folks. Welcome. It is currently day 42 of the shutdown, though the end of that does seem imminent. And I'm going to start a new countdown. Okay, everybody? Just in case you were wondering, I looked this up today. It has been 3,217 days since Donald Trump first took office in 2017. You may be thinking to yourself, Maggie, why is that number relevant? Well, folks, if you remember back to 2017, Donald Trump and the MAGA movement in that year also controlled the Supreme Court, both houses of Congress, and the White House. So, 3,217 days since the MAGA movement has controlled basically all levers of federal government. Now, there have been interruptions. There was an entire presidency of Joe Biden. But 3,217 days since the MAGA movement was on formal notice that it had control of government and therefore held the power to do what? Basically anything that they wanted. You know, like address quality and affordability of health care. So as we sit here today with 8 Senate Democrats, for whatever I cannot figure out for the life of me reason, have decided to do a no deal deal complete capitulation to the MAGA movement, let's just keep that number in mind. The MAGA movement, since they took power back in 2017, have had 3,217 days to have a piece of legislation hot off the presses, ready to go to solve this affordability and quality problem that has been plaguing all of America for a very long time. They hate Obamacare? Great. Show me what you like. Show me what you support. Show me what you want to do to fix healthcare in America. 3,217 days since last you all held, again, all three branches of power, of government, the power there, the last time around. So I say to you, your bluff has been called. If there's any possible, conceivable, strategic, what I'm going to call still disgusting defense of what these 8 Senate Democrats did, maybe it's to call the bluff of the MAGA movement now that we're 3,217 days into when they had formal notice that you've got control of every branch of government and the American people, as you say, they hate Obamacare. It's so terrible, which is untrue. It's polling higher than it ever has since its adoption. But you've had thousands and thousands of days to come up with your solution. So America's waiting now, and I'm going to keep count every day until we see a legislative package from MAGA that shows me how they're going to make healthcare more affordable, more accessible, and of higher quality to every American. And until then, I would suggest very politely, maybe not so politely, to every single Democrat in Congress, why don't you join me in counting every single day that goes by without any meaningful solution to the healthcare crisis that continues to plague this country? With that, I want to bring on my guest for my first half hour. Her name is Angela Lang. She is the Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. Welcome back, Angela. I want to talk to you about the shutdown because I'm ticked off. I'm like majorly ticked off about this. What were your thoughts? I mean, when I went to bed and I saw the news hitting my phone, I had to tell myself, like, don't go read the article, Maggie, because flying yourself into a blind rage probably won't do your mental health any good while you're trying to get to sleep, but woke up to, oh, what fresh hell is this? Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts? What's your reaction to this bizarre capitulation?
Something very similar. I felt like I was really exhausted, and I was like, you know, we're just going to go to bed really early. So I did not watch the vote. And similarly, I woke up and it was like, wait, what? Why? I was looking for like, why? What was the compromise? What was the thing? What did Dems get in return, right? If we're going to actually do this. And then it's like a pinky promise, maybe kind of a whisper of something potentially in the future. And I immediately logged on to TikTok because I was very curious to see how folks, especially with the contrast of Tuesday's election and how folks were very excited. There were all sorts of range of Dems that won, whether it was Zoran or anyone else. It was a good night. And a lot of folks who are more establishment type, moderate types, I had never seen call for Chuck Schumer's removal to speak this disparagingly about Democrats. And I thought that was like, whoa, this is a different level of disappointment and rage that I don't think I've really seen before. And people not only are upset at Trump, but obviously feel betrayed, especially when all these Democrats showed up and got the Democrats to victory. Granted, these are different you know, the institution of a party. We showed up for Dems and they're not showing up for us.
Yeah, I made that same point. To me, it's basically like flipping the bird to the millions of Americans that showed up last Tuesday to express their outrage about what Donald Trump and the MAGA movement has done, which is in every conceivable policy decision, prioritized welfare for the wealthiest and giveaways to mega corporations over what are obvious policy, like not really all that controversial. I had a conservative on the line for quite some time yesterday. Mixed reactions from our listeners. Why do you give this guy so much time? Because I wanted to get through, like, okay, you're worried about fraud and SNAP. Great. Let's just agree that that's bad. Right. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere near even the highest estimates. It's nowhere near a majority of SNAP recipients. It's nowhere near the bulk of funds in SNAP. You know, whatever it like went through all of the series of objections. And I was like, just consider for a moment that these things that you object to are we actually agree to address them. I'm not going to concede that they're actual points, but let's just say, But that these programs still overwhelmingly serve people that you have just admitted deserve this help. And you're allowing your party that you support to basically pull the rug out from all of those people that you just admitted were deserving, however that is bizarrely now defined on the right? To do what? It's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. Again, to what end? Consolidation of power along the lines of authoritarianism, personal enrichment, outright corruption by a president, and then giveaways to folks that don't need it. He couldn't defend the minimum wage, right? He can't defend why we tax people who are making $45,000 a year or less on an income tax basis, while the Waltons sitting on $500 billion are doing better now than they were before Donald Trump was elected, and way better than they were back in 2016, because he's done this welfare for the wealthiest not once but twice.
Anyways,
to drive home this point, folks, first, I want Angela and I and you all to take a listen to Dr. Oz being asked by Maria Bartiromo, what's the MAGA healthcare plan? And then we put that together with all of the other pages and pages and concepts of plans and lots of ideas and nonsense. Because again, people, 3,217 days since Donald Trump and the MAGA movement back in 2017 had complete and total control of every branch of the federal government. Listen to Dr. Oz explain to us the key pillars of the MAGA movement's new healthcare plan to make it more affordable and more effective, more accessible for millions of Americans. The detail, the thinking, since they've had 3,217 days to put this legislation together. Take a listen.
$350 billion. The full counterproposal continuing resolution rolls back the Medicaid savings of $1.5 trillion. Republicans are never going to go for that. So do you have a thought on how you want to see this play out once these subsidies do expire this year?
You always ask the right questions, Maria. So I spent good part of the weekend with the White House working on exactly the answer to that question. We have lots of great ideas, but I don't want to show our cards. As the president often says, why would I telegraph to you what we're going to do? We have to have an open government.
Why would I telegraph to you? Because the American people deserve to know.
Transparency.
What the hell your plan is. You all just refused to negotiate with Democrats. Eight of them just decided to, I don't know, fold and go home. What's the plan? I started working over the weekend, 3,217 days ago. You know, nobody, like, let's throw together some ideas over the weekend on how to solve the healthcare problem in America. Like, the hubris. There's one thing, Angela, I don't know that if you've seen this, that I've noticed. When I deal with, like, literal political neophytes or folks that have never spent 1 minute actually trying to build or do anything, and they show up at the table, and they're like, well, listen, I've got these great ideas, lots of concepts of plans and pages of these great ideas about how to fix healthcare, and everybody that's been working in this stuff for 25 years is like, let me see. Oh, yeah, every single thing that you're talking about here has been attempted or tried. You have nothing new to offer. Dr. Oz, why don't you go back to TV? Because you got nothing to offer here.
I mean, this is like a genuine question for folks that support this administration. It's like you hear that and you hear the other things of, you know, oh, I have concepts of plans, all of these different themes. How are you not embarrassed? Like, we're all hearing the same things. Like, how do you square that away in your mind? I don't understand the mental gymnastics people do in order to be like, yeah, no, that's fine. I support his agenda. What is the agenda outside of like bigotry, which has been very well documented. But when we're talking about policy and healthcare and things that will actually uplift people out of poverty and change people's lives, suddenly there's no plan. Like, you can't ignore that.
3,217 days since Donald Trump and the MAGA movement had full control of the entirety of federal government back in 2017. There has been no legislation proposed. Not once, not ever, nothing. Not a page, not a word, not even a syllable of a proposal on what the MAGA movement wants to do about healthcare, which is also the thing that I hear all the time from political neophytes and what I'm gonna call know-nothings. Well, this is really bad. Okay, what's your idea? Silence. Yeah. 3,217 days of deafening and stunning, cruel silence that will leave millions of Americans who depend on the ACA to get their health insurance, literally and figuratively, out in the cold. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion. What comes next for Democrats? With Angela Lang, Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Nope. Yeah, I think so. Just to do something different. I guess I'll introduce the clip. Fine. You convinced me, Jacob. I will do that. It's funny, Angela, when we started putting these together, it was not a long clip. It's now 2 minutes and 20 seconds because they keep saying this.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm getting my friend and frequent contributor, Angela Lang's impressions about the Democratic no deal, knee-taking capitulation.
Pinky promise.
Yeah, but whatever. It's weird. That happened over the weekend and is now transpiring in real time. And in case anybody has missed the point here, I don't care what you have to say about the ACA. You don't like it, you hate it, you think it works, doesn't work. Then tell me what your plan is. And in case anybody's forgotten, here is the Republican plan to save American healthcare. Take a listen.
But if you have ideas and you have plans, why not have that out there to talk about in the public so the people can hear that debate happening? I mean, you could have committees in session right now.
They will, Caitlin.
I think the question is on the health care plan, to Marjorie Taylor Greene's point, is if the government reopened tonight, would Republicans have a plan to address the Obamacare subsidies?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You
yes,
would have
we
a plan tonight.
We have proposals to, we could have that ready immediately. Yes. Yeah, because here's the thing. We work in a deliberative public body, and we have hundreds of members. It's a very complicated, very complex issue that requires a long time to build consensus around. We have ideas on the table, and the whole process of the legislative body is to build consensus around it. That's why we have to do that, and that's what we've been planning to do all along.
And Republicans have said, repeal and replace, and It's like we're in a wilderness. Republicans are in the wilderness on what to do to try to
no,
fix
actually,
our healthcare.
No, actually, we're not. We're not. We've got pages and pages and pages of ideas on how to reform healthcare.
Yes or no, you still do not have a plan.
I have concepts of a plan.
When I say that the Republicans have been working on a fix for healthcare, we've been doing this for years. And many of you who've been on this beat for a while know this is two publications. When I was chair of the Republican Study Committee, the largest caucus of Republicans in Congress, we published volumes of ideas on healthcare. This was our volume one, a framework for personalized affordable care. We had an entire body of the smartest minds in Congress, the smartest Republican minds who worked around the clock, the Doctors Caucus, they talked to stakeholders from around the country and in all the areas related to healthcare, and they came up with a formula on how to reduce the cost of healthcare dramatically, how to make Obamacare affordable and workable in some way for the American people, to increase the access to care and the quality of care. And these ideas have been on paper for a long time. There's volumes of this stuff, volumes of it.
It's not just talking points to us. We do this. We have ideas, and we have already implemented ideas and measures because we've proven it. We did that in the Big Beautiful Bill.
We have lots of great ideas, but I don't want to show our cards. As the president often says, why would I telegraph to you what we're going to do?
Show me the money. Show me the plan. Where's the legislation? Angela, this is just absolutely unacceptable. And frankly, when you are an opposition party, which is what the Democratic Party is right now, and your opposition is not just on a particular issue, in other words, accessibility, affordability, and quality healthcare, you don't step away from the bargaining table with nothing to show your constituencies. Yes, opposition is oftentimes painful and frustrating, but you don't just give in. And by the way, we're going to have the same damn fight in January.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned if this is how this is playing out now, and what does it look like next time? If Democrats can't even hold the line, It's also my understanding, I heard that all the 8 Democrats are not the ones that will be up in the next go arounds. And so I think that was calculated and coordinated.
Let's just sit there for a second.
Yeah.
Cortez Masto, these are the ones not up until 28. None of them are up for election in 26. None of the senators voting for this from the Democratic side. Cortez Masto, Hassan, Fetterman, Kane, King, and Rosen, not up until 2030. Durbin and Shaheen, both retiring. And then Cortez Masto, Hassan, and Fetterman, not up until 28. If that was the calculation, how cynical.
It's like they knew that this was going to be widely unpopular, that they already kind of had the PR game and the, you're not up for a little while and we'll just hope that the American public forgets, but you're going to be the sacrificial lambs for now.
And I actually could maybe deal with this, maybe a tiny bit, if they would have just said, we are unwilling to play basically chicken with Americans' food right now. So here's what we got in the deal. Full SNAP funding, USDA funded for a year, because we will not play chicken with people not having food in their belly. Federal workers, all their back pay. We're not going to play chicken with people's livelihoods like the Republicans are. And we're telling you right now, Republicans, you've got until that January date to put legislation on the table to do whatever you think it is. At least that would have been out loud and clear. You would have said, listen, Democrats are going to put up bill after bill after bill about how to backfill on a state-by-state basis, direct grants to states to help people afford ACA. We're going to give states that latitude. We're going to take some of that tax welfare giveaway to the wealthiest. We're going to ask for that to be directed towards states. Tell me why you did this other than we just decided to. And that, again, I find this to be despicable, but possible. Maybe some folks need to see what happens to their ACA and their health insurance under the big brutal bill, right? This is what the Republican plan for health insurance is. You don't get none, right?
Exactly. And Republicans saying that they don't have a plan when they wrote Project 2025 is laughable. Let's think about that.
Laughable. Folks, she's Angela Lang, friend of mine, friend of yours. She is with me every other Tuesday at 4:00. When we come back, I'm going to be talking to Jeff Mandel, president and general counsel of Law Forward, about Donald Trump pardoning the real election fraudsters from 2020 and what that means for midterms. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, folks, you're not going to want to miss any of the show, but especially when I introduce new segments. And this one came to me yesterday. If you didn't catch the news, a Reagan-appointed federal court judge has resigned, basically in protest over what Donald Trump represents: lawlessness, mayhem, foolishness, attacking the independence of the judiciary, undermining the apolitical role that both the Department of Justice and the FBI should have in these United States. He wrote a scathing, scathing rebuke of the Trump administration in The Atlantic. This got my juices flowing, and starting this Friday, we're going to do it every Friday sometime in that first 4:00 hour. I'm going to call this segment This Week in Federal Government Purges, whether by resignation, firing, or just forcing people out. I'm going to be focusing and bringing to your attention those people who have left or are leaving the federal government, either by choice or by being forced out, that should really be a warning sign to all of us, regardless of which party we may favor in any given electoral cycle. Here's part of that, and there were a couple of other headlines that I wanted to bring to your attention. I'm teasing them now for Friday. Again, we're going to do this every Friday sometime in the 4:00 hour. You've heard about this White House, the Donald Trump demanded investigation into John Brennan. Well, it had been proceeding in the U.S. Attorney's office in Philadelphia. But the U.S. attorneys and the assistant U.S. attorneys in that office, were putting up a lot of roadblocks, throwing a lot of flags on the play, calling out all kinds of concerns they had over the investigation. So Pam Bondi plucked it from Philadelphia and put it into the U.S. District Attorney's, U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of Florida. And two frontline prosecutors from that office have now resigned. I'm going to talk more about this on Friday, but these are the sorts of things that are incredibly concerning, and they're happening all over the federal government. So we're going to dedicate some time every week on Fridays in the 4 o'clock hour to this week in purges from the federal government. Here's another bit of legal news. We had a bright spot on Monday with the Supreme Court refusing to take up a case which could have led to overturning legalized marriage or marriage equal access for folks that are LGBTQIA+. So that was good news. But in bad news, Donald Trump, the individual, the person today, has also asked the Supreme Court to overturn the verdict that was issued against him in the civil case that found that he had sexually abused and defamed writer E. Jean Carroll. So watch that space. And last but not least, this little bit of legal news. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, has notified a federal judge in New Jersey that the Trump administration and the Department of Homeland Security finally removed tweets about Representative LaMonica McIver, she's a Democrat from New Jersey, relating to her arrest in May that stemmed from her showing up as a congresswoman to observe what was happening at an ICE facility within her congressional district in New Jersey. Because, you know, federal law enforcement aren't supposed to do that. You're not really supposed to try to poison the jury pool and inflame people's prejudices when you're prosecuting someone. You know, because that's not objective, neutral, or apolitical, which is what the administration of law enforcement should always be in a democracy. Last but not least, this bit of news from the Wall Street Journal today. The Federal Housing Finance Agency director, this is this guy named Bill Pulte, and I'm going to get to this a little bit later in the show as well, his great idea about how to make home ownership more accessible for people by making it more expensive. Weird, but true. I'll talk about that a wee bit later on the show. But this from a headline in the Wall Street Journal today. Fannie Mae watchdogs have been probing how Pulte obtained mortgage records of key Democrats. Yeah, I'm kind of curious. How is it that it's just Democrats that are being investigated for these sorts of mortgage frauds? For example, State Attorney General in Texas, Ken Paxton, apparently has three or four houses that he has claimed as his primary residence to get lower mortgage rates. I think I missed the federal prosecution of General Paxton. Weird, huh? In any case, in this general theme of champagne for my real friends, if you're Donald Trump, and real pain for all my sham friends, and how that theory has infected the administration of justice in this country under Donald Trump. Very happy to be joined by my friend and yours, Jeff Mandel, the president and general counsel for Law Forward, based right here in Wisconsin. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thanks, Maggie. Good to be here.
Yeah, a bizarre through line whenever I look at any of sort of the legal wonky bits of headlines in any given day. And again, it's, you know, there's rules for people that oppose Donald Trump politically, and then there's different rules for everybody else. And we saw evidence of that over the weekend. Donald Trump has pardoned Rudy Giuliani and 77 others who were accused of election fraud, actual election fraud in 2020, including Sidney Powell, John Eastman, Ken Cheeseborough, Mark Meadows, and many Wisconsin Republicans who were part of the conspiracy, the fraud to mock up completely fabricated and fraudulent slates of electors, and frankly, hand them to Senator Ron Johnson with hopes that he would hand them to Vice President Pence on January 6th to try to basically steal the election from Joe Biden back then. Your organization, Law Forward, has brought complaints before the Office of Lawyer Regulation here in the state of Wisconsin about a number of these people who did this fake electors election fraud here in Wisconsin who are lawyers. Tell us more about what Law Forward has done to try to bring some accountability. And does the pardon by Donald Trump of all of these fraudsters from 2020 have anything to do, any impact on state prosecutions of these people? There's a handful of them here in Wisconsin, in addition to those ethics complaints that are currently pending for some of the lawyers. So explain to us how all that works here and what your organization has been up to bring some accountability.
So let's start with the important part, which is that the pardon that President Trump issued Sunday night does not have any effect on ongoing state prosecutions, including the criminal prosecution here in Wisconsin of Attorney Jim Troupas, of Attorney Ken Chesbrough, and of Mike Roman, who was a lawyer working in Washington for the Trump campaign. It does not have any effect on state disciplinary proceedings, including the legal ethics proceedings that are ongoing here in the state of Wisconsin against Jim Troupas and against Andrew Hitt, who's an attorney and acted as the chairman of the fraudulent electors meeting here in Wisconsin in 2020. Law Forward was at the forefront of this, and it's something I'm truly proud of. In February of 2021, we were the first folks in the entire country complaining about this. We filed that day our ethics complaint against Andrew Hitt with the Office of Lawyer Regulation. If any of your listeners are saying, well, wait a minute, that means it's been almost 5 years and it's still pending, then you're paying attention and you've got it exactly right. We filed a complaint with the Wisconsin Elections Commission against those 10 people for subverting or trying to subvert the will of the voters and the actual election results. And we filed a criminal complaint with the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office. When we didn't get the results we wanted from those things, we filed the first in the country civil lawsuit against the fraudulent electors here in Wisconsin. And we did that with our friends at Georgetown Law School who helped us. And we were able to use one of, as you know, Maggie, one of the great tools of litigation is that you get discovery. You get to ask the other side what the facts are. You get to see all the documents and the emails and the text exchanges. And we were able through that to unearth materials that no one had seen before. Even the January 6th Select Committee had not found some of this material. And we were able to show that this entire scheme had started in Wisconsin. And if it hadn't happened in Wisconsin, it never would have happened anywhere else. And we settled that case so that we could make all those documents public before the 2024 election. We could show exactly what happened and make sure everyone understood. And after we did that, it was then that Attorney General Call filed the criminal complaint against the lawyers who were really at the heart of this and were the ones who conceived of it and were driving the process. So yes, the president has now pardoned all these people, but there weren't any federal prosecutions or federal investigations ongoing. This really doesn't change much. What it does is it underscores for all the rest of us how improper and how dangerous to our democracy this scheme was. You don't get pardoned if you didn't do anything wrong. You just don't.
Yeah, it's truly stunning to me, especially because considering that it is extraordinarily difficult to get disbarred. Like, that is a very, very high bar. And just as evidence of how clear and absolutely illegal, unethical, like pick your descriptor here, as an illustration of that, Rudy Giuliani was disbarred both in the state of New York and Washington, D.C. In addition, lest any of us forget, Rudy Giuliani has also declared bankruptcy because he was found liable to the tune of $148 million for these very same lies that were suborned, furthered, and had an actual conspiracy go forward here in the state of Wisconsin to steal the 2020 election when he lied about two election workers in Georgia and basically destroyed their lives. Like, these women live under constant threat. They've had to move multiple times. Of course, now Mr. Giuliani is calling for his law licenses to be reinstated. Jeff, let me ask you this question. Do you have any insight into where the criminal investigation by Attorney General Call's office stands with respect to Messrs. Roman, Troupas, and Cheeseborough, or where the Office of Lawyer Regulations investigation as to whether or not both Mr. Troupas and Andrew Hitt made affirmative misrepresentation, knowing lies, in trying to forward this actual scheme and plot to steal the 2020 election. Where do these matters stand?
Well, the good news is that the Attorney General's prosecution of Troupas, Cheeseborough, and Roman is moving forward. It's in the Dane County Circuit Court. The defendants said, oh, you have to throw this case out. There's nothing here. And the court dispatched that. The court said, no, we're moving forward. So that case is proceeding. The wheels of justice, of course, turn slowly. In fact, the most remarkable thing in what you said about Mr. Giuliani is that that case is already done, and he has been found liable for all of that. The OLR process, I think, is largely on, it's a bit of a black box, but we think it's largely on hold while we're waiting for the prosecution to move forward.
Folks, Jeff Mandel, President and General Counsel of Law Forward. Jeff, can you stick around for another segment? Because I wanted us to just kind of zoom out and take a really big picture view of what we've got going on here. It's a lot to keep track of. Folks, stick with us. We've got Jeff Mandel for another segment right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We're going to talk about what all of this means when we think about the 2026 elections here in Wisconsin and everything that's on the line for you and your family. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, joined by my friend and yours, Jeff Mandel. He's a Wisconsin lawyer, president, and general counsel of an organization called Law Forward. We've been discussing these pardons that Donald Trump meted out this week for Rudy Giuliani, the Kraken Lady, Sidney Powell, Eastman, Cheeseborough, Mark Meadows, as well as a handful of Wisconsin Republicans. Still facing criminal charges in Wisconsin, which Donald Trump can do nothing about, remain Carol Brunner, Mary Boustran, Daryl Carlson, Kelly Rupp, Bob Spindell, Pam Travis, and of course, Jim Troupas, as well as Mike Roman. So here's the thing that makes me really nervous when we look into 2026. Here in Wisconsin, Bob Spindell continues to hold a seat on the Wisconsin Elections Commission, despite the fact that he was one of these people that engaged in a knowing fraud. They can say they wanted it to be true. They wanted it to be the case that Donald Trump won Wisconsin. He didn't. The election was not certified to show those results. They lied and fraudulently created a document that purported to literally steal an election. Why is Bob Spindell still on the Wisconsin Elections Commission? Who can do something about that? And how much damage could he do when it comes to the 2026 election, whether we're talking about the spring and the Supreme Court or the fall midterms, Jeff?
Sure. First, let me just clarify that the 10 fraudulent electors are not facing criminal charges in Wisconsin.
Excuse me. Thank you so much for that.
It's only the lawyers. Yep. Only the lawyers who orchestrated the scheme. Now, that doesn't mean that the other 10, you know, might not be able to, but they are not currently facing criminal charges here in Wisconsin. But Bob Spindell, as you note, is a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, one of six commissioners. And while on that commission, he was one of the fraudulent electors. And you ask a great question, Maggie, which is, why is he still there? How is this possible? And who can do anything about it? The reality is that the two people who are most able to do something about it are Mr. Spindell himself. He could resign, and he's been asked many times to his face at meetings. Organizers have come wearing T-shirts about firing Bob. He actually, I believe, he asked for a T-shirt. He has been completely unwilling to resign. He insists he did nothing wrong, and he doesn't understand what all the hubbub is about. The other person who could single-handedly do something about this is Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux. Senator Lemieux could simply appoint someone else. Mr. Spindell serves at the sole pleasure of the majority leader of the state Senate. And he actually reappointed Spindell after the fraudulent elector scheme and Spindell's involvement had come to light. The only other way, besides one of the two of them having a change of heart, that Mr. Spindell could be removed would be through impeachment. And that would require, of course, a majority of the assembly and then two-thirds of the Senate to believe that Spindell shouldn't be where he is. And unfortunately, we just don't have that. Your other question was about how much damage Mr. Spindell can do for the 2026 election. And there the news is slightly better. He's in a position of influence, but the commission is equally balanced by design between Democratic appointees and Republican appointees. It is the case that soon, before the 2026 election, it will be time for one of the Republican appointees to become the chair of the commission. But the last time that that came up, there was no support for Mr. Spindell, other than himself, to become the next chair. And so the another Republican appointee, Don Millis, served as the chair for that two-year period. I would tend to imagine that is likely to recur, that there won't be support for Mr. Spindell, and so that Commissioner Millis will wind up doing it again. Two members of the commission are former clerks. They're not eligible to be chair. So there are just two Democratic appointees and two Republican appointees who rotate. And shortly before the 2028 election, the Democrats will take over the chairmanship of the committee again.
It's interesting to me that Senator LeMahieu refuses to do what by any reasonable measure should be a no-brainer, right? Like, I have no question in my mind that if a Democrat was credibly accused of engaging in anything looking remotely like election fraud, that if a Democrat was the leader of the Wisconsin State Senate, that they would remove that person from the commission and find someone else. Because here's the thing. There's plenty of smart, MAGA-friendly Republican lawyers out there. Our state has got tons of them. Why would someone persist in letting someone take the seat that destroys your credibility, right, that shows a complete lack of objectivity and, frankly, contempt for our election laws? And the reason, in my opinion, Jeff, and I want to get your take on this, is that Senator, State Senator and Speaker of the Senate, Leader of the Senate, Devin LeMahieu, is afraid to do what he knows is right. He's afraid of Donald Trump. They keep a lackey and a guy that's facing, again, terrible accusations of his knowing fraudulent conduct from 2020. They keep him in place, not but for those behaviors, but because of those behaviors, right? It is the signal to Donald Trump that we are on your side. We'll do everything we can to keep people who will lie and debase our election machinery to serve you. We're going to keep them in positions of power. That is what I think this is about. Nothing more, nothing less. Your take, Jeff.
Sad but true. I'm with you.
Sad but true. Big thanks, Jeff. I appreciate you. I appreciate the work of Law Forward. Please keep up the fight for all of us who do care about having fraud-free election processes. When we come back at the top of the hour, it is Veterans Day. We're going to take some time to acknowledge our veterans. I'll be joined by a special guest, maybe two, to talk about the mental health challenges facing veterans here in the state of Wisconsin. Important discussion. Don't miss it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.